The following production is based on a novel written in 1881 by a 9-year-old child. The spelling and grammar, including typos, has been left unedited and read as originally written. The audiobook you're listening to was produced over the course of 2 years. Many of the young actors in this production don't sound or perform the way they do now. Their performances in this production are not a reflection of how skilled they are now. They're just a reflection of how long it takes to make an audiobook. And now, back to the young visitors, or Mr. Saltina's plan.
Chapter 6. High Life. Mr. Saltina awoke next morning in his small but pleasant room. It was done in green and white with monograms on the toilet set. He had a tiny white bed with a green quilt and a picture of the Nativity and one of Windsor Castle on the walls. The sun was shining over all these things as Mr. Saltina opened his sleepy eyes. Just then there was a rat tap on the door.
"Come in,"
called Mr. Saltina, and in came Edward Procurio, balancing a tray very cleverly. He looked most elegant with his shiny black hair and pale yellow face and half-shut eyes. He smiled in a very mysterious and superior way as he placed the tray on Mr. Saltina's pointed knees.
"Your early beverage,"
he announced and began to pull up the blind, still smiling to himself.
"Oh, thank you,"
cried Mr. Saltina, feeling very tousled compared to this grand fellow. Then, to his great surprise, Procurio began to open the wardrobe and look at Mr. Saltina's suits, making Italian exclamations under his breath. Mr. Saltina dare not say a word, so he swallowed his tea and ate a Marie biscuit hastily. Presently, Procurio advanced to the bed with a bright blue serge suit.
"Will you wear this today, sir?"
he asked quietly.
"Oh, certainly,"
said Mr. Saltina.
"And a clean shirt would not come amiss,"
said Procurio.
"What about this pale blue and white stripe?"
"With pleasure,"
replied Mr. Saltina. So Procurio laid them out in neat array, also a razor and brush for shaving. Then he opened the door, saying,
"This is the bathroom. Shall I turn on hot or cold?"
"I don't mind,"
said Mr. Saltina, feeling very hot and ignorant.
"It is best for you to decide, sir,"
said Procurio firmly.
"Well, I will try cold,"
said Mr. Saltina, feeling it was more manly to say that. Procurio bowed and beat a retreat to the bathroom. Then he returned and told Mr. Saltina that when he was washed, he would find his breakfast in the sitting room. When Mr. Saltina was dressed in his best blue suit and clean shirt, he strolled into the sitting room where a gay canary was singing fit to burst in the window and a couple of doves cooing in a wicker cage. A cheery smile greeted him as Procurio glided in with some steaming coffee. Mr. Saltina felt more at home and passed a few remarks about the weather. Procurio smiled and covered some lovely kidneys on toast, and as he did so, bent and whispered in Mr. Saltina's ear.
"You could have come in your dressing gown."
Mr. Saltina gave a start.
"Oh, can I?"
he said.
10,000 thanks."
Then Procurio passed out, and Mr. Saltina finished his kidneys and chirped to the birds and had a cigarette from a handsome purple box which he found on the desk. Then Procurio entered once more and with a bow said,
"His lordship is going to a levee this morning, and thinks it might amuse you to go too. Could you be ready by 11 o'clock?
"Oh, yes, what fun,"
said Mr. Saltina.
"Have you any notion what a levy is, my man?"
Procurio gave a superior smile.
"It is a party given by the queen to very superior people. But this one is given by the Prince of Wales, as the queen is not her usual self today. It will be at Buckingham Palace, so you will drive with his lordship."
Mr. Saltina was fearfully excited.
"What shall I wear?"
he gasped.
"Well, of course, you are to have black satin knickerbockers and a hat with white feathers. Also, garters and a star or two."
"You surprise me,"
said Mr. Saltina.
"I have none of those articles."
"Well,"
said Procurio kindly,
"his lordship will lend you his second best cocked hat, as you are obliged to wear one. And I think, with a little thought, I might rig you up so as to pass muster."
Then they rummaged among Mr. Saltina's things, and Procurio got very intelligent and advised Mr. Saltina to wear his black evening suit and roll up his trousers. He also lent him a pair of white silk stockings, which he fastened tightly round his knees with red rosettes. Then he quickly cut out a star and silver paper and pinned it to his chest, and also added a strip of red ribbon across his shirt front. Then Mr. Saltina surveyed himself in the glass.
"Is it a fancy dress party?"
he asked.
"No, they always wear that kind of thing. But wait till you see his lordship. If you are ready, sir, I will conduct you in."
Mr. Saltina followed Procurio up countless stairs, so they came into the Earl's compartments and tapped on the bedroom door.
"Come in!"
cried a merry voice, and in they strode.
"I have done my best with Mr. Saltina, my lord. I trust he will do. The hat, of course, will make a deal of difference."
Mr. Saltina bowed nervously, wishing he had got correct knickerbockers, as his trousers did not feel too firm in spite of the garters.
"Not half bad,"
cried the Earl.
"Try on the hat, Saltina. It is on my bed."
Mr. Saltina placed it on his head, and the feathers and gold braid became him very well, but he felt very jealous of the Earl, who looked a sight for the gods. He had proper satin knickerbockers with diamond clasps and buckled shoes, and black silk stockings, which showed up his long, fine legs. He'd a floppy shirt of softest muscle with real lace collar and cuffs. A sword hung at his side, and a crimson sash was round his waist, and a splendid cocked hat on his head. His blue eyes twinkled as he pulled on a pair of white kid gloves.
"Well, come on, Saltina,"
he cried.
"And don't be nervous. I will get you a pair of knickers tomorrow. Will you get a hansom, Procurio?"
Presently, the Earl and Mr. Saltina were clattering away to Buckingham Palace.
"You won't mind if I introduce you as Lord Hyssops, do you?"
said the Earl as he lit his pipe.
"See, we're sort of mixed up with the family, so it won't matter and it will look better."
"So it would,"
said Mr. Saltina.
"What do we do with the levy?"
"Oh, we stroll around and eat ices and champagne and that kind of thing. And sometimes there's a little music."
"Is there any dancing?"
asked Mr. Saltina.
"Well, not always,"
said the Earl.
"I'm glad of that,"
said Mr. Saltina.
"I'm not so nimble as I was, and my garters are a trifle tight."
"Sometimes we talk about the laws and politics,"
said the Earl.
"If Her Majesty is in that kind of mood."
Just then, the splendid edifice appeared in view, and Mr. Saltina licked his dry lips at sight of the vast crowd. All around were carriages full of costly people, and outside the railings stood tall lifeguards, keeping off the mere people who had gathered to watch the nobility clatter up. Lord Clincham began to bow right and left, raising his cocked hat to his friends. There was a lot of laughter and friendly words as the cab finally drew up at the front door. Two tall lifeguards whisked open the doors, and one of them kindly took the cabman. Mr. Saltina followed his lordship up the grand steps, trying to feel as homely as he could. Then a splendid-looking fellow in a red tunic and a sort of black velvet tam-o'-shanter stepped forward from the throng, shouting,
"What name, please?"
"The Earl of Clincham and Lord Hyssops,"
calmly replied the Earl, gently nudging Mr. Saltina to act up. Mr. Saltina nodded and blinked at the menial as much as to say, "All is well," and then he and the Earl hung up their cocked hats on two pegs.
"This way!"
cried a deep voice, and another menial appeared wearing stiff white breeches, top boots, and a green velvet coat with a leather belt, also a very shiny top hat. They followed the fellow down countless corridors and finally came to big folding doors. The Earl twiddled his mustache and slapped his leg with his white glove as calmly as could be. Mr. Saltina perspired rather hard and gave a hitch to his garters to make sure. Then the portals divided, and their names were shouted in chorus by countless domestics.
"The Earl of Clincham and Lord Hyssops."
"The Earl of Clinchams and Lord Hyssops."
"The Earl of Clincham 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 and Lord Hyssops."
The sumptuous room was packed with men of a noble nature, dressed like the Earl in satin knickerbockers, etc., and with leaves of every hue, with long frames and jewels by the dozen. You could hardly move in the gay throng. Dukes were as not as there were a good lot of princes and archdukes, and it was a very superior levy indeed. The Earl and Mr. Saltina struggled through the crowd till they came to a platform draped with white velvet. Here, on a golden chair, was seated the Prince of Wales in a lovelier mind cloak and a small but costly crown. He was chatting rather genially with some of the crowd. Up clambered the Earl, followed at top speed of Mr. Saltina.
"Hello, Clincham,"
cried the Prince, quite homely, not at all grand.
"So glad you turned up. Quite a squash, eh?"
"A bit overpowering, Your Highness,"
said the Earl, who was quite used to all this.
"May I introduce my friend Lord Hyssops? He is staying with me, so I thought I would bring him along, if you don't mind, Prince."
"Not at all,"
cried the genial Prince, looking rather surprised. Mr. Saltina bowed so low he nearly fell off the platform, and as the Prince put out a hand, Mr. Saltina thought he'd better kiss it. The Prince smiled kindly.
"I am pleased to see you, Lord Hyssops,"
he said in a regal voice. Then the Earl chipped in.
"And how is the dear Queen?"
he said reverently.
"Not up to much,"
said His Highness.
"She feels the heat of her soul."
And he waved to a placard which said in large letters, "The Queen's indisposed." Presently, His Highness rose.
"I think I'll have a quiet glass of champagne,"
he said.
"You come too, Clincham, and bring your friend. The diplomats are arriving, and I'm not much in the mood for deep talk. I have already signed a dozen documents, so I have done my duty.
They all went out by a private door and found themselves in a smaller but gorgeous room. The prince tapped on the table and instantly two menials in red tunics appeared.
Bring 3 glasses of champagne,
commanded the prince.
And some ices.
He added majestically. The goods appeared as if by magic, and the prince drew out a cigar case and passed it round.
One grows weary of court life,
he remarked.
Yes.
Agreed the earl.
It upsets me,
said the prince, lapping up his strawberry ice.
All I want is peace and quiet, and a little fun, and here I am, tied down to this life.
He said, taking off his crown.
Being royal has many painful drawbacks.
True.
Mused the earl. Silence fell, and the string of the bands could be heard from the next room. Suddenly, the prince gazed at Mr. Saltina.
Who did you say you were?
He asked in a puzzled tone.
Lord Hyssops,
responded our hero, growing purple at the lie.
Well, you are not a bit like the Lord Hyssops I know,
replied the prince.
Could you explain matters?
Mr. Saltina gazed helplessly at the earl, who had grown very pale and seemed lost for the moment. However, he quickly recovered.
He is quite all right, really, prince,
he said.
His mother was called Miss Hyssops of the Glen.
Indeed,
said his royal highness.
That sounds correct, but who is your father, eh?
Then Mr. Saltina thought he would not tell lies, when in trembly tones he muttered,
My poor father was a butcher, your highness, a very honest one, I may add, and passing rich he was called Dominic Saltina, and my name is Alfred Saltina.
The prince stroked his yellow beard and rather admired Mr. Saltina for his truthful utterance.
Oh, I see,
he said.
Well, why did you palm off on my menials as Lord Hyssops, eh?
Mr. Saltina wiped his sweating brow, but the earl came to the rescue nobly.
My fault entirely, prince,
he chimed in.
As I was bringing him to this superior levy, I thought it would be better to say he was of noble birth. Have I offended your royal dignity?
Not much,
said the prince.
It was a laudable notion, and perhaps I will ask Mr. Saltina to one of my big balls someday.
Oh, your highness,
gasped our hero, falling on one knee.
That would indeed be a treat.
I suppose, prince, you have not got a job going at this palace for my friend,
asked the earl.
You see, I'm rubbing him up in society ways. He fancies court life as profession.
Oh, does he?
So the prince, blinking his eyes.
Well, I might see.
I suggested if there was a vacancy going, he might try cantering after the royal barouche,
said the earl.
So he might,
said the prince.
I will speak to the prime minister about it and let you know.
10,000 thanks,
cried Mr. Saltina, bowing low.
Well, now I must get along back to the levee,
announced the prince, putting on his crown.
I've booked a false with the Archduchess of Greenwich, and this is her favorite tune.
So saying, they issued back to the big room where the nobility were, whirling gaily around the more serious people, such as the prime minister and the admirals, etc., were eating ices and talking passionately about the laws in a low undertone. The earl was soon mingling gaily in a set of dancers, but Mr. Saltina dare not because of his trousers. However, he sat on a velvet chair and quite enjoyed overhearing the intelligent conversation of the prime minister. And now we will leave our hero enjoying his glimpse of high life and return to Ethel Montague. Yes.
This is a Cartesian Theater production, with Rebecca Stern as the narrator, Jackson Anderson as Mr. Saltina, Sarai Gonzalez as Procurio, Stephen Shelmerdine as the Earl of Clincham, Chris Credden as the Menials, and J.D. Triolo as the Prince of Wales. The levy guests, lifeguards, and mere people were played by Jackson Anderson, Leanna Doyle, Allison Mercier, and Sarai Gonzalez. The countless domestics were played by Jackson Anderson, Leanna Doyle, Allison Mercier, and J.D. Triolo. Music for this chapter was provided by volunteer musicians from museopen.org. Stay tuned for Chapter 7 of The Young Visitors, coming March 31st, 3 p.m. Thanks for listening.